Good morning, welcome to today's oil market update with Callum McPherson. How is your weekend, Callum?
Very good, thanks, you?
Yeah, very nice, thank you. So today we mainly want to focus on the 2020 oil hedging considerations piece that is being released this morning, of which is available via the podcast webpage if you would like to access it. But before we dive into that, can you briefly take us through the events in the Middle East? So as Brent is now trading below the levels seen before the US attack, which killed Qasem Soleimani.
Yes, well, the market has come down to $65 per barrel. In fact, we've been trading slightly below that this morning. Since we last spoke last week, it's been very widely publicised anyway, we've had the Iranian reprisals to the US action and Trump's reaction to that. And generally the feeling is that the sort of issue is now over with for now. But I think far from getting even with the US for killing one of its top military people, Iran's response is essentially a gesture. It had no military effect, and of course it's backfired quite badly, because whereas Iran initially had, I think, the sympathy of other countries who thought the US had acted hastily and without consultation, but since Iran's had to admit that it did shoot down the Ukrainian airliner, loss of 180 or so lives of various nationalities, that sympathy has evaporated. Matters have got worse over the weekend after the British ambassador to Iran was detained for a short period of time for attending a vigil connected with people who died in that as a result of that crash. It becomes harder and harder for the European and other countries that were trying to push for reviving the nuclear talks to find a diplomatic solution now to do so. Now, while the market seems to sort of feel that this thing has blown over, that there have in fact been some reports of a further rocket attack on Iraq, and this time 4 Iraqi soldiers have been killed. Now, it's not completely clear, but that seems very likely if the story is true to have come from Iran. But as I say, not a great deal of attention being paid to that. And just one other thing, for anyone who's looking for risks of geopolitical events, look no further than Libya, where the civil war, again, not been talked about very much for a long time, but that is starting to come back onto the radar. Turkey and Russia have been taking an interest in that, and indeed there are some talks being held in Moscow imminently.
Okay, thank you. So now let's move on to the 2020 piece. So if we begin with the demand side outlook, whereas the market has been heavily focused on the demand side, you don't see this as being the main question?
No. So I think over the last 12 months or so, a very high proportion of what commentators have been discussing about the oil markets has been connected with developments on the US-China trade war, whether it's looking more or less likely that they would reach a trade agreement, and hence whether it's positive or negative for the global GDP outlook, which in turn is seen to drive oil demand and hence prices. So if you have a look, if you've got our report in front of you and you look at page 8, you'll see a table, and this shows annual GDP growth and oil demand. And what we see is that global GDP growth has been lower than the previous year in 2019, it's about 2.9%, and oil demand has also been rather sluggish in 2019, around 1 million barrels per day, although still not dramatically different from recent years. For 2020, investor economists are expecting 3.3% global GDP growth, and the International Energy Agency expects oil demand growth also to be a bit stronger, but about 1.3 million barrels per day. But these are the kind of ranges we're looking at with potential uncertainty on oil demand growth. I mean, maybe it's 1.3 million or 1.5 million or 1 million barrels per day if we get a bad outcome. But it's that kind of range I think we're looking at. So relatively narrow range. But that contrasts to, I think, a lot more, a much wider potential range on the supply side.
Okay, and what uncertainties do you see for supply in 2020?
Well, there are two potential types of uncertainty. One is the possibility of an unintended disruption. So something like the drone strikes on Saudi Arabia that happened last year. And the other one is the possibility of excess production. So is the US going to overproduce and oversupply the markets, that kind of thing. So the first one of those, really, we're talking, I suppose, about geopolitical risk is probably the most likely source of unintended disruptions. And here, of course, the Middle East and particularly Iran is maybe the one to look out for. And we've talked about what's going on in the short term with this, but you know, the market's feeling does seem to be that things have risks have dissipated somewhat. But nevertheless, let's say that things did escalate. You know, we never know what the future holds. So if things did escalate, how likely is it that we will actually get a disruption? And we've got a couple of interesting charts. One is that shows Iranian production, or rather Iranian exports, and it shows that they really have been decimated. A disruption to Iranian production isn't, you know, which is now essentially being used domestically, and with only a little bit of it getting to the outside world. So that really shouldn't be an issue for global oil markets. We've also got a chart of Iraqi production, because another possibility of some escalation is that it destabilizes and upsets production in Iraq. But it's interesting to note, actually, that during the period when Iraq was when significant areas of Iraq were actually being controlled by the so-called Islamic State, that production was actually largely unaffected. I mean, remarkably, really, but it did actually manage to continue as if really nothing was happening. That may or may not happen in the future, but nevertheless, that's at least one historic precedent. Then there's a possibility of further attacks on Saudi Arabia, as we saw last year. But again, that the Saudis demonstrated quite remarkable resilience in their infrastructure and the way they dealt with the problem. In order to smooth out, to be able to continue to honour exports, essentially. And finally, there's a possibility of the Strait of Hormuz being closed by Iran. I mean, they've often threatened to do this. But I think if they did do that, it's just going to bring a lot more players in against them, other international navies and so on, and so I think that's something that is probably unlikely that they would do that. So that sort of suggests that from geopolitical risk in the Middle East, perhaps the risk of disruption is actually not that great. We'll see, but I think in the longer term, though, that the risk of disruption centres around sort of interesting question about what exactly happens with the US. Does it continue to withdraw from the Middle East as it suggested it will do? And if it does do that, is that going to leave a vacuum that will need to be filled by, I mean, who could it be? Well, Russia, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Iran, possibly even China, all seem to have interests in increasing their presence in the area. So that's the first type of potential risk, that the unintended disruption. Now, moving on to the possibility of excess production, the real question mark here, I think, is over US production. Can it continue to grow at a similar rate to last year or not? And there are arguments both ways on this. Now, we have a chart that shows just how significant US shale has been to the mix of US oil consumption, and in that US shale has now largely displaced net US imports, and so, you know, so that just highlights just how significant shale has been for the US. Now, one of the limitations that the shale industry faced last year was pipeline capacity. So it could produce a lot of oil, but could it actually get that to the refineries and export terminals that could buy it and make use of it? But that that led to significant discounts to prices being earned by shale producers, certainly in 2018 and also early 2019. But that problem has, to quite a large extent, gone away because more pipeline capacity has been put in place, and so now shale producers are able to get their oil to market and are not suffering the kind of discounts that they did in the past. So that's been a good thing for the shale producers. On the other hand, investors are concerned that the shale producers, although they're generating a lot of oil, are not generating a lot of cash or returns for them. And indeed, a lot of smaller players who got indebted over the years have gone under. There has also been signs of consolidation, most significantly perhaps the Occidental's purchase of Anadarko. And indeed, some of the oil majors have been buying into the shale space. So a little bit of a mixed picture, perhaps, from the point of view of investors. There's also a tremendous amount of ongoing innovation in the US shale space, and this is helping to bring down costs, improve recovery rates, and we're probably seeing that in some of the drilling figures, where we see the productivity of new wells continuing to grow. On top of that, outside the US, let's not forget we've also seeing growth in Canada and Europe and Brazil, so they're also likely to add further barrels as well. Then, of course, from OPEC Plus, which is OPEC and aligned with Russia and various other countries that have signed up to joint cuts, of course, announced a cut of, the headline mentioned was 500,000 barrels per day when they met in December, which has now come into force, if everyone's complying with it. Although we think in practice that cut is probably, in practical terms, more like 300,000 to 400,000 barrels per day.
Okay, so where does this leave us in terms of the balance for this year then?
Well, I think the danger is that the market is oversupplied. If we look at the factors that go into this equation. So we've got OPEC Plus, we've got the US, and we've got other non-OPEC Plus suppliers on the supply side, and then of course we've got the demand side of the equation. Now the demand side, as we've talked about, we think is going to be a relatively narrow range, 1.3 million, something like that, barrels per day higher than last year. OPEC have said what they've said. Let's assume that this does amount to 300,000 or 400,000 barrels per day. We've got other non-OPEC producers, which we think will add some more barrels. And then we've got the US, and the US is probably where the big uncertainty is on the supply side. So if we sort of make those assumptions about on the supply side, other than the US, and we form a matrix where we look at different US supply figures, sort of increases over in 2020 over 2019, given that that's really the big variable, and then we have similarly on the other axis we look at demand growth, and we see what kind of balance we get in the market. Well, in that matrix, even in quite surprising sort of increases in demand growth, and we've got this table in the report, we still need to see US supply disappointing on the downside. So I think really in the sort of likely range of scenarios we see, we do kind of get to the conclusion that the market has a good chance of being oversupplied, and consequently the OPEC's cut announced at the end of last year to be introduced this year, so now, is probably not enough to balance the market.
Okay, and if the market does does turn out to be oversupplied and prices fall, as you might say, where do you think the market might go?
Well, there's at $58 per barrel, we have a really important, in Brent terms, we have a really important trend line support coming up from the lows of 2016. This has been an important support in recent times. It was also touched, I think, in 2018. So if that does break, that could be quite a significant event. And where might the market go after that? Well, in 2018, we saw a low of 50. Before that, we have lows from last year of around $55 per barrel. So I think those are the kind of levels in Brent that we might see if this trend line support was broken. And though I've said that the demand side of the equation and the US China trade talks are maybe not really the fundamental issue for markets, they are important for sentiment. And I think if we do see oversupply, particularly in this quarter, and the next phase of the trade talks do not go as quickly as people expect or perhaps hope, then I think that will start to weigh on sentiment. So this could then tie in with the fundamental issue of there being oversupply. If, on the other hand, the market does break higher, perhaps for geopolitical reasons, perhaps because US supply disappoints, then I think 70 is a level to look out for. That those are the kind of highs we've seen on the recent disruptions, both on the Saudi drone strike and on the Iranian issue. Is 70 or the low 70s. So if we get a breakthrough there, then the next real level to look out for is $75 per barrel. That's the high of 2019. If that were to be broken, then we could be going into some more interesting territory on the upside. I think overall, though, while last year Brent was mostly in a $60 to $70 per barrel range, I think there's more uncertainty this year, and we might well see a wider trading range.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Callum. And if you would like to view the 2020 oil hedging considerations piece that we've spoken about today, it is, again, available via the podcast webpage. Thank you.
Thanks very much.